on today's podcast, take 35, Flamingo by the Flaming
Trust
Groovies
the Wizards
and Teenage
present
Head
Robert
by the Flaming
Pollard's
Groovies.
Guide to the Late 60s. Before going on tour with his band, Guided by Voices, in 2001, Robert Pollard recorded his favourite records onto 62 double-sided cassettes. Music from 1966 to 1971, from the best-known bands of the era to obscure, unheard-of psychedelic curios. The Wizards are on a mission to listen to and explore every groove. Kicker and Chorizo invite you to turn off your mind, relax, and float downstream as you listen to Robert Pollard's Guide to the Late 60s.
Once again, we're faced with one of Bob Pollard's tapes that doesn't specify any albums here. He specifies only the band, the Flaming Groovies. So we've taken an executive decision to focus on Flamingo, which came out July 1970, and Teenage Head, which came out the following year. They're both kind of part of a trilogy of the band changing direction, really, at this stage, where they were previously archetypal San Francisco folkies. But these albums particularly are straightforward rock and roll and good fun, but not at all psychedelic, which is what they would be hearing probably around them. Flamingo featured mostly the same band as on the other album as well, but we've got Roy Loney on lead vocal, guitar and percussion. Roy A. Loney, actually. Cyril Jordan, lead guitar, slide guitar, bit of percussion. Tim Lynch on lead guitar, three lead guitars, wow. Cello and percussion. Danny Mim was on drums, and George Alexander, presumably him off Seinfeld, I can't imagine it would be a different person, on bass guitar. And yeah, it's just an unashamedly raw rock and roll album, as far as I can see. And I think it's sort of thing that you might play on a jukebox in a bar somewhere in America, and everybody would like it.
Yeah, I've been going through the chords, just wondering. I think there are no songs on the first album that have more than three chords, apart from She's Falling Apart, which is the only one that gets a bit psychedelic.
Yes, it's a bit trippy, that one, yeah, that's true.
And is comfortably the worst song on the album, in my opinion.
Absolutely right, yeah. Yes.
It's trying to be psychedelic, it's trying to be a bit Dear Prudence in the verses, with its chromatic chord sequence.
I think the problem with that song is that they're famously the Flamin' Groovies.
Uh-huh.
And we've got Come In After Me and Head In for the Texas Border. But here, She's Falling Apart. It's a sign it's not working for me.
Right, and also Keep A Knocking.
Keep A Knocking,
so,
yeah.
So all the good songs have apostrophes in them, like the band name. And I think they're the first band we've talked about on this series with an apostrophe in their name.
Really?
Possibly the last as well. Unless Herman's Hermits, are they on this? Herman's Hermits?
I don't know
if
they are.
On this list.
I don't think they are.
But yeah, that's a good point. It's a good point. So, yeah, that song doesn't really fit with the rest, I don't think.
I think it's quite interesting because obviously it showed, presumably they realised it wasn't great because they didn't, on the following album, do anything that sounded at all like that.
No. I mean, so there's possibly a decent song in there somewhere, but it's lost, I think, amongst all the very dated and rather gimmicky production tricks. And the drums are great. The drums are great on both of these albums.
Well, I think the musicianship is pretty good.
Yeah,
I mean,
they're really basic
songs, but they're played very well.
Yeah. So, but apart from that song, none of the songs on this album have more than three chords. And in fact, a couple of them, Keep A Knocking, for example, just has two: B and F sharp.
Well, that's a Little Richard song, isn't it? So
you can't
blame the Flaming Groovies for that.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I'm not blaming them. I'm commending them for it. You know, I like free chord rock and roll songs. Like you said, it's good old-fashioned rock and roll, isn't it? and starting off with a good old-fashioned rock and roll song that quite easily could have been, I mean, obviously it's played in a sort of more of a rock style, but it could, you know, the song itself, good rock, Gonna Rock Tonight, could easily be a Bill Haley cover or something, couldn't it? There's nothing in there musically, apart from the way they play it, it's more electric, but there's nothing in there musically that couldn't have been a song from the 1950s, which is why...
It's got hand claps in it, which I don't know if necessarily Bill Haley would have done.
No, but it's also got ooey baby near the end, which is basically a total rip-off of Sea Cruise by Frankie Ford. But I love Sea Cruise by Frankie Ford. So it's got a bass solo and a drum solo. It's just really great playing. One guitar is sort of echoing the rock and roll walking bass line. Another guitar is playing more lead lines. Just the three chords, A, D and E on that one.
I can imagine a number of bands that you're in or have been in could easily play stuff off this album, right?
Are you saying that the bands I'm in are limited musically? a covers band that I was in who mainly played 50s and 60s music played loads of songs which were only three chords. Johnny Cash and early Elvis and all that kind of stuff. And as you know, I love that music. So there's a lot on these albums for me to enjoy because...
Yeah, no, I thought you'd probably like them. And actually, Gonna Rock Tonight, which is absolutely fine, I think is possibly one of the weaker songs on the first side. I think it gets increasingly better. I really love Heading for the Texas Border. I think that's great.
Yeah.
Almost MC5-like, a bit proto-punk.
Yeah, it's a lot faster, isn't it? It's brilliant. It's one of my favourite songs on the album as well. Covered by the Raconteurs, you know, Jack White and Brendan Benson's band.
So I now understand.
Yes, and they do a good version. They play it even faster than the Flaming Groovies do. And just to go back, I mean, I hate to keep harking back to the episode where we talked about that band, The Savage Resurrection. And I really, really slated them off. But one of the reasons I slated them off is because they've got two lead guitarists who don't appear to be listening to each other. Whereas this, you know, at the end of Heading for the Texas Borders, you've got two lead guitar, and at different times, one of them is staying fairly similar in place, while the other one is going off on a bit of an excursion, moving around the notes a lot, and then they swap, you know, and that sounds good. It sounds good, yeah. Whereas... Savage Resurrection does not when they do that because they're both going off and doing their own thing and appearing to not listen.
I think that's called jazz, isn't it? It's called jazz.
It's just called rubbish. Yeah, I think it's just called rubbish. So okay. Yeah, Heading for the Texas Border is probably my favourite on side one. But I like all of side one.
Coming After Me, very good. It's got a bit silly.
Yeah, it is a bit silly. They're coming after me. Eight state troopers with a meat hook are coming after me at one point. Three chords there, E, A and B, by the way, if you're keeping count.
Is that more difficult as a combination?
Well, it's still 1-4-5, which is, I suppose on the guitar, A, D and E are slightly easier than E, A and B. B is a bit of a difficult chord, depending on how you play it. But three chords again. Then you've got Sweet Roll Me On Down, which is a bit more country, got a bit of a Buddy Holly and the Crickets feel to it.
Oh, okay. I thought it was a bit like The Band or Loving Spoonful, that sort of acid folk stuff. It's good. I like that one.
There's an instrumental bit with kind of stops in the middle, which kind of reminded me a bit of Oh Boy by Buddy Holly and the Crickets. Oh, yeah. Again, three chords, A, D and E there on that one. And they keep a knocking. The much covered Little Richard song.
And it's pretty faithful, isn't it, as a cover version?
It is. And then side two I don't think is quite as strong.
I'd agree with that. There's two songs I don't particularly like on side two. The rest of it's fine, but...
Okay. So one of them, She's Falling Apart, that we've already mentioned.
Yeah. I don't really like Gemma Blade either. I think the topic matter is a little bit dated, isn't it, really? But the riff's not great. It's a bit boring. And it seemed, for me, a very long 3 minutes.
Right. I don't particularly like Jailbait either. You're quite right on the inappropriate subject matter, but that's kind of what people sang about back then.
Yeah, yeah.
So there's loads of songs which are talking about, you know, she was just 17, if you know what I mean, and all that. That's a kind of 60s staple, isn't it? I didn't particularly care for Childhood's End, which was very Rolling Stones-y. There's a few songs on the second album we're going to talk about that sounded like the Stones of Let It Bleed kind of era.
Sticky Fingers, yeah, yeah.
It's a bit country. It's a kind of waltz time song.
It's got a slide guitar. The slide guitar is quite good.
There's lots of slide guitar all over both these albums, isn't there? And that's good.
Mm.
But it was a bit forgettable compared to...
The interesting thing is, though, you talk about we've always mentioned Jailbait and the inappropriacy of it. I thought Second Cousin...
Mm-hmm.
was kind of a piss take of all that, and I thought it was surprising that they then went and did a straightforward, you know, 60s cliche.
Yes.
Because Second Cousin, which on the face of it is pretty much a straight up rock and roll song, but it does have, you know, maybe someday my second cousin, my bride, and I thought that's got to be talking about Jerry Lee Lewis, hasn't it?
The song's quite Jerry Lee Lewis as well, isn't it? The chords and the rhythm of it is Jerry Lee Lewis. Yeah. So I think it's kind of like maybe a bit of an homage to Jerry, a tongue in cheek. Her mother says I'm crazy. Her father says beware. The parson thinks the idea stinks, but well, I just don't care. We're going to catch ourselves an aeroplane, we're going to take off for the sky, and we won't touch down on Earth again until next 4th of July. She's my second cousin from my dear old pappy's side, and they say that loving her is out of line. She's my second cousin from my dear old pappy's side. I'm going to make my second cousin my first bride.
Yeah, first bride, notice. So, it's, you know, there's obviously more lined up.
Yes.
Yeah. And I think the idea of 17, know what I mean? That's all very well, but Jerry Lee Lewis got in there well before 17.
He did indeed, yeah. What a brilliant song, though. One of my favourites on the album. The only other song we haven't talked about, I think, is the last song, Roadhouse, which is a very fast electric rockabilly song.
Well, good guitar interplay on that one as well, I think.
It certainly is, yeah. And I like the little drum solo or kind of instrumental section in the middle as well.
Yeah.
It's three chords there, E, D, A and E. Exactly the same as Sympathy for the Devil and exactly the same order as Sympathy for the Devil, but as if that was played at breakneck speed by someone like the MC5.
Yeah, good.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's a good listen, right?
Yeah,
you know,
it's
not changing the world. It's not anything particularly new, but it's a good listen.
Yeah, I enjoyed it very much. My favourites were Second Cousin, Roadhouse, Heading for the Texas Border, And as I said before, the only song with more than three chords is the only one I don't like.
I'll just say that, I mean, I think I'm echoing you really, but Heading for the Texas Border was definitely one of my favourites, and Roadhouse. I like Childhood's End, where you didn't, and Second Cousin is great. Most of it's really good. So I'm giving it quite a high score. I don't know about you.
Go on, you go first then.
Well, I've given it a 6.5.
Well, I've also given it a 6.5. Yeah.
Well, excellent. How about that?
Excellent. Okay.
All right, well, so about, well, a few months later, really, because that came out in July. March 1971, the band released Teenage Head, which would be the last album that Ron Lone was on.
Yeah.
He left after this recording. And I've got the album actually in front of me, and I hadn't realised until fairly recently that it's kind of a concept album, and it's kind of a film soundtrack, because the album itself, it says, Kama Sutra Records presents the Flamin' Groovies in Teenage Head.
Oh.
Rather than, yeah, so special guest star Jim Dickinson, so this is him out of, or associated with Big Star, on piano and a few tracks, and introducing the Flamettes. The Flamettes being Karen Berg, John Charles Costa, R. Meltzer. And then the Flaming Groovies appear as themselves.
Okay. And what do the Flamettes do on this album?
I don't know what they do. Randy Newman's written a song on this album. It's a cover of a Randy Newman song.
Yeah. I found a really good interview on a website called Perfect Sound Forever, which you can find at furious.com. And a guy called Jason Gross, or Jason Gross, has interviewed both Roy Loney in 2005 and Cyril Jordan a bit more recently in 2014. So I'm going to just read you. They ask him about Flamingo and Teenage Head and the contrast between them. This is Roy Loney talking. Flamingo, cut in no time flat. We cut it here in the city pretty much live. The vocals weren't live, but mostly we went for a crunchy live sound. We wanted it to be as out of control as possible. We cut Roundhouse 10 times, and it wasn't out of control enough, so we pushed it until it was. We did it with a let's go for the throat feel. End of that quote, but just to say, earlier on in this interview, they talk about seeing the Stooges and seeing the MC5 and it being a big...
So MC5 definitely was an influence then.
Yes, yeah. Carrying on with Roy's quote, then I went to New York and I mixed it with Richard Robinson. I brought it back, played it for the guys, and they all said, it sucks. They didn't like the mix. They thought it was missing things. And I said, well, we cut it live and didn't add a whole lot to it. It sounded sparse because it was a sparse record. They thought it should sound bigger. And I thought, maybe they're right. Maybe it's too sparse, too raw. It's one of those albums where I go back and forth with it. Everybody does it in the band. Sometimes I listen to it and say, hey, this is very cool. And sometimes it's like, it just doesn't make it. Whereas with Teenage Head, I think we were all pretty happy with. Recorded in New York, we had a lot of time to cut it. We were trying to be Rolling Stones, no question about it. We had Jim Dickinson playing piano. We really wanted to be a kind of Rolling Stones band playing really good hard rock with hooks. And we spent some time on it, and it shows. I think it's the best produced Groovies album that I was on. It has the best feel, I think. And that's why it's the one that's stood the test of time.
Yeah, I would agree with everything said there. I think what surprised me is that Teenage Head was released before Sticky Fingers, because I wouldn't have been at all surprised that it was, if it sort of aped it, but actually it preceded it.
Yes, yeah. Well, I think this is the one that is generally held up as being their greatest album. It's one. It's in that book, 1001 Albums to Listen to Before You Die.
Yeah. Fatalism. I mean, probably their best known song doesn't come for another 6 years, actually, well, 5 years. So Shakes Up Action, which I think is probably their best known song, it was a different iteration of the band and didn't come out until 1976.
Yes, and was until I started listening to these albums for this podcast, that was the only song of theirs that I'd ever heard of or heard.
Right.
And I think
we saw Chuck Prophet play it, right?
We saw Chuck Prophet and the Mission Express doing an amazing cover version of it. He is known as a big fan of this band, isn't he?
Yeah. Being from San Francisco himself.
Yeah.
Well, but anyway.
Doesn't he talk about it in Temple Beautiful, in the song Temple Beautiful? I think he might refer to seeing them there.
Maybe.
In some song, I think he refers to going to see the Flaming Groovies at some point.
I think what's interesting is that it's clearly this is their Rolling Stones album, and the album before it wasn't Stones and wasn't Beatles. It was very much rock and roll. The one before that, which we haven't listened to, which is Super Snaz, which I said at the beginning is kind of part of this trilogy. That's the one that people would tell you sounds most like the Beatles.
Right.
So they've gone from the Beatles to the Rolling Stones over a period of a couple of years.
Via sort of Chuck Berry in the middle.
And
it says on here, this is from the Cyril Jordan interview on the same website. The interviewer says, Teenage Head sounded more bluesy than the earlier records. Do you think so too? And Cyril Jordan says, Teenage Head is a unique thing because by the time we cut that, Timmy, our guitar player, had been busted for dealing, so he didn't make the session until the last 3 days. Roy had stopped playing guitar, meaning because he was concentrating on the singing, I guess. So I got to play all the guitars. And because of that, I got to do the arranging. Timmy plays harmonica on Teenage Head. I think he plays rhythm guitar on Dr. Boogie, and that's about it. I play all the guitars on everything else. So that's the reason the album sounds a little bit more bluesy, and it's different. So, yeah, I agree.
Presumably George Alexander was busy doing Seinfeld at that point, was he?
I don't know. He doesn't, not even mentioned there, is he? I didn't like this one as much. But that's perhaps not a surprise because I'm not really a blues fan.
I like the
rock and roll stuff more than I like the blues stuff. However, there are some songs on here that I really, really liked.
You must like the teenage head, yeah. You've got to like that, surely.
Yeah, I like it. I don't like it as much as most of the songs on the other album we listened to, and there are other songs on this album that I like a lot more. I like the lyrics. Once I realised again, teenage head sounds really dodgy, doesn't it? But it's not really about that. And also, in the song, the narrator is clearly a teenager himself, which kind of makes it okay, I suppose. So otherwise, she's my hopped-up high school queen, she's a teenage love machine, would be, you know, distinctly dodgy, wouldn't it? But he does say earlier on that he's a teenager as well. So, I really like the last verse. The last verse is my favourite.
Is that the one with the child? I'm a child of atom bombs.
Yes. When you see me, you better turn your tail and run, because I'm angry and I'll mess you up for fun. I'm a child of atom bombs and rotten air and Vietnam's. I'm you, you are me. Now, that sounds like an Iggy Pop lyric to me.
And it's delivered as much, isn't it? Because the vocals are pretty snarly.
Yes. I really like... I like Evil Hearted Ada, which is a bit of a silly song, and it's kind of like an Elvis pastiche again. Back to three chords, E, A, and B. And it's got that kind of Just Because or Mystery Train feel. In fact, it's a total rip-off of Mystery Train and Just Because with that kind of... and the singer's doing, like, basically proper Elvis impression, isn't he? With heavy on the slap back. I really like that one. But the song after that, Dr. Boogie, is a good old swinging rock and roll rhythm and blues song. Again, three chords, just B flat, E flat, and F on that one. It's really fun, and it reminds me a bit of T-Rex because it's quite silly. I like the bits where he says, "You've got a hey dee dee, you've got a hey dee hey, if you want to get along with me." And then in the next verse, "You've got to mow the lawn if you want to get along with me." And you've got to walk the dog if you want to get along with me.
Yeah.
Those last two, mow the lawn and walk the dog, those are the kind of things my wife says. You know, you've got to walk the dog and mow the lawn if you want to get along with me. And I also like the verse that says, "I boogie for the doctor, I boogie for the nurse, I'm going to keep on boogieing till they throw me in a hearse." It's just...
I like that one as well. I like the vocal delivery on that, which is actually very different to the vocal delivery on Teenage Head. But it's rather than being snarly and angry, it's kind of a little bit creepy, which is good. It's funny.
Yes. Yeah, and that kind of nasal Mick Jagger stuff comes into this album quite a lot, doesn't it? That kind of, which I don't dislike. My other favourites, I really like the Randy Newman cover you mentioned. I'm not familiar with that song before. Have You Seen My Baby? Mm. I've been off to listen to the Randy Newman original and also found that Ringo Starr has the most famous version of that. Both of them versions are pretty decent, but this one's way better.
It's much noisier for a start, isn't it?
It's faster. There's a whole six chords in that one. Six chords.
No way.
Yeah. C and G in the verses. It's just C and G. And then the chorus, you've got F, E, A minor and A flat. Yeah.
Wow.
So I really like that one. And the other one I liked is the song just after that, Yesterday's Numbers. It's just a simple song. I like the bit in the chorus and the bit at the end where it just says, "Tell me it's all right," repeated over and over and over over the fade. So I quite like that. It reminded me of very much of the Rolling Stones, but kind of the Rolling Stones stuff that I like, which is sort of mid-60s, Have You Seen Your Mother, Baby, era, Get Off My Cloud kind of time.
It's kind of a blues rock garage rock mix up, isn't it? And big vocals. Yeah, I like that one. I like City Lights as well, which is a bit more countrified.
Yeah,
bit more. So is it country soul maybe? Very Stones like.
Very Stones. Very Led Zeppelin. Lots of slide guitar. Yeah, I quite like that one. I particularly enjoyed a couple of the rhyming couplets from that. Shall I read them to you? I buy myself a store bought suit and a Stetson and a big fur coat so the winter never gets in. I like the
right
Stetson and gets in. And then the other one, because the song's about a trip to New York, and there's a bit about King Kong. Apparently there was a bit of an in-joke in the band. They used to refer to the Big Apple or New York. They used to refer to it as the Big Monkey because they were all big fans of the film King Kong. It says, got to see the Empire's tallest building where the plane shot that big monkey and they killed him. Yeah, so there's some creative rhyming going on. I liked it.
Well, the only two songs we haven't mentioned are, 3220, which is a Robert Johnson tune with completely changed lyrics.
I've got a 3220 built on a 45 frame.
Yeah. I'm not quite sure what that means, but...
It's gun talk. Gun talk. I thought it was cars.
Yeah, I assumed it was cars.
I thought it was like, I've got a 69 Chevy with a 396 Fuley heads and the Hurst on the
front,
which is car talk.
Yeah.
I don't know what it means, but I think it's cool. So I thought it's that. It's a 3220 on a 45 frame. But no, it's a gun. Hang on, I can tell you. It's referring to the Winchester 3220. The 32 means that its cartridge is .32 caliber. I think .32 of an inch, maybe. And 20...
Is that good? Does that kill people?
Well, I'll come back to that. And 20 is the number of little bits of powder stuff that you need to put in the thing to make it go bang. We're sounding like a couple of English guys. Apologies to any American listeners who actually know what we're talking about.
Basically, it's like caps. Is it like caps?
It's a bit like that, yeah. Yeah, and it's not really for shooting people. It says it's originally touted as a combination cartridge suitable for varmints, small game and deer. But the deer component was fairly quickly dismissed, except for shots less than 100 yards away in the neck or the head. So it won't bring down a deer unless you're right up close to it, getting it in the neck or head.
The 3220 is the natural enemy of the varmint.
The varmint, which is... includes, amongst others, badger, coyote, foxes, mink, raccoons, rodents, and legomorphs.
Oh, right.
I had to look up what a legomorph is. Do you know what a legomorph is?
I should do. I've heard that before. I think it's a type of creature, isn't it? Is it? I'm sure it's in a Pollard lyric. I can't remember. No, tell me.
Yeah, rabbits and hares and those kind of things. And plus, any urban wildlife that can cause damage to buildings or property by creating mess or fecal pollution. For example, feral pigeons, rats and squirrels. So 3220. Mm. So that's it's like 16 shells from a 30-06. The Tom Waits.
Yeah.
That's about a gun, isn't it? As well.
Well, I presume it's half as good as the 3220. 16's half of 32, isn't it?
I don't know. It is, but it's a 30-06. Who knows? It's like they're talking a foreign language to me. There's some crossover between the gun talk and some kind of sexy talk, I think. Because he says, I'm going to cock my hammer, I'm going to squeeze that trigger tight. And he says, I'm loaded, baby, and it's all for you. And he also says, I'm going to...
I can't see anything other than gun talk there.
Okay, all right. He says, I'm going to ventilate my woman if I catch her with another man.
Oh,
presumably
dear.
Ventilating her by putting holes in her with
your gun. Yeah.
Which is probably a deliberate callback to I'd rather see your dead little girl than to be with another man from Elvis's Baby Let's Play House, the same line later borrowed by the Beatles for their song. Run for your life. But I quite like it. It's a good little rockabilly song. It's quite reminiscent of that early Sun Sessions Elvis sound.
Yeah, but it's acoustic-y blues thing, isn't it? It's fine. And I mean, I don't think there are any songs on this album that I don't like.
Yeah, I got a bit bored by Whiskey Woman. It's very Rolling Stones. It just seems to go on a bit. It gets a bit better in the last minute or so when the band start rocking up a bit. But it's kind of a bit like Wild Horses. It's a bit like Forever Young, although from the sounds of it, it predates either of those. But
I thought it sounded a little bit like, and you may well not know much of this band other than their one or two hits. I thought it was a bit like early Lynyrd Skynyrd. So that sort of southern rock sound, a bit Tom Petty-y. Tom Petty. I can imagine him doing it.
Yeah, you're right. I don't know much about Lynyrd Skynyrd. I'll just agree with you and say, yes, I agree.
Yeah.
Yeah, so overall, there's a really nice slide guitar player. Whoever's doing the slide guitar playing, presumably Cyril Jordan, because he said he played most of the guitar on this album.
Yeah.
So there's slide guitar all over this, and it's really nice.
It is good.
So even when I don't particularly like the songs, I quite like the... the playing is great, as before. But
yes,
for my money, this album, it should be the other one. It should be the one that's in 1001 albums to listen to before you die. It should be that album, because it's... I prefer it.
Yeah, I agree. And I gave this a 6.
Okay, I've gone very slightly lower. 5.5. Favourite songs?
Teenage Head, City Lights, Evil Hearted Ada, Dr. Boogie.
Okay, I've also gone for Dr. Boogie. Have You Seen My Baby? And Yesterday's Numbers, which I really, really like. And what was it? Evil Heart, the Elvis, the really Elvis one. Evil Hearted Ada, that one's called.
Yeah, Evil Hearted Ada, yeah.
Yeah, so...
Well, so here's a question. Before we kind of start wrapping up here, neither of us, I think it would be fair to say, are big Rolling Stones fans. Do we like the Flaming Groovies more than we like the Rolling Stones?
Well, I'm just wondering what mark we gave to the Rolling Stones when we looked at them. You clearly like the Flaming Groovies more than... in fact, we both do. We only listened to, in fairness, their Satanic Majesty's Request and Beggar's Banquet, which I don't think is either of our favourite era of Rolling Stones, but we gave them lower marks than we did for these two albums. You'll have to go back and listen to that. I'm not going to spoiler it by telling you what marks we gave, but that was episode number 17, if you want to go and find that again.
For me, I could quite easily describe the Flaming Groovies, certainly around these albums, as being like the Rolling Stones without the over-the-top theatrics, which is better than the Rolling Stones with the over-the-top theatrics.
Yeah, I know what you mean. So Roy Loney left the band at this point. It's a quite interesting part here about why he left, from that same interview I quoted before. Well worth a read, by the way. Furious.com is the website. What led you to leave the band? It was sort of a natural thing. I was getting kind of tired. We didn't have a label. We weren't playing a whole lot locally. Nobody was that keen. Timmy had left the band because he and Cyril didn't get along. That bothered me because Timmy and I were the beginning of the band. We were the two guys who put the whole thing together. So we brought in James Ferrell, a nice guy. At that time, I have to say, he was nowhere near the guitar player that Tim was, and I didn't think we sounded this good. So we continued for a while, but it was pretty obvious that Cyril wanted to take the band in a new direction. I kind of lost my direction with the band. I just didn't give a fuck, actually. Cyril really wanted to go in a more Beatles direction. His beginning in music was the Beatles and the Beach Boys. He's a younger guy than me and didn't have the background of Elvis and all of that. I just liked stuff that was really rocked, so my concept was, let's rock, and he was more, let's do some catchy pop tunes. That was never my forte as a singer, that's for sure. He and I had some sort of falling out. I couldn't put my finger on what happened, but we drifted apart. We weren't as tight as we once were. Yeah, there we go. They made up. They played gigs together in the 2010s.
Well, I saw them.
Blimey.
I've seen the Roy A. Loney fronted Flaming Groovies. They played as part of the All Tomorrow's Parties thing that Stuart Lee curated. This is 2016 in Prestatyn. And I was really excited about seeing them. And there's a riff line somewhere I think you could probably listen to it on our website somewhere. Shake Some Action, I think they might have even started with that, which was quite incredible. But actually, they weren't that great.
Ah, that's...
They weren't that great, which is a shame. But nevertheless, it's nice to be able to say that I've seen them. And funnily enough, coincidentally enough, I've also, at the same festival, seen the band that we're going to look at next.
And who might they be?
That's the 13th Floor Elevators. So on our next show, we're going to look at the 13th Floor, well, the psychedelic sounds of the 13th Floor elevators and Easter everywhere.
Robert Pollard's Guide to the Late 60s is a Trust the Wizards production. You can find out more at pollard60s.com and on Twitter at pollard60s. If you liked it, then please subscribe and review wherever you get your podcasts. You may also enjoy their other podcast, which you can find at trustthewizards.com. Original music by the Malibu Storks. Kika Revels and Chorizo Garbanzo are currently appearing in Waiting for Godot at the Mail Theatre in Leeds.